Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? I'm feeling the fall coming in. My heat pump today didn't have to be turned on, either on heat or cool. The temperature was just perfect. I love this equilibrium moment of fall. Just like in Don't Starve Together, fall is the best season. It's the season where everything is calmer. The regulation of temperature, you can be careless about it. Wonderful. I love feeling the temperature of the outside inside. Steven Robinson says, hello. Look at this, a hammer. This is how they insert a handle to the hammer. Look at this. They oil a piece of wood and they inserted it until they can't push further. It even cracks the metal that's just there as a kind of container for the wood at first. It will shave off, and they will shave off, I guess, the wood that stays on top along with these shavers here. Oh, yeah. Unbelievable. Well, this piece of wood is there to stay. That's how you make a solid hammer. Ty says the crunchy leaves make it so easier to hear predators sneaking up. Oh, that's what you like about the fall. It's the predator avoidance. Okay. Everyone has his reasons to like this season. Mariona Fall reminds us of the horror of this woman existing. Ah! Oh! I love the humorous social media post about this girl saying, whether you like it or not, this is peak sexual female performance. This woman has had orgies with hundreds of people on the Bahamas under the crypto bill of her boyfriend. In terms of sexual accomplishment, you just don't get better than this. This is the peak. The woman from FTX, the girlfriend of Sam Bankman-Fried, who betrayed him. Nick Fuentes is hilarious. Today I want to do a full review of the debate, and I have isolated segments that I want to review from yesterday's debate. I don't see a change in Trump. I think that this is still very much the Trump against whom Nick Fuentes had announced the Groyper War, but Nick Fuentes is already giving signs of weakness in his Groyper War. He has announced that he is satisfied with Trump's debate performance and that perhaps he will shut down slightly on the Groyper War, or that he's headed toward a reconciliation with the Groyper War. I think it's absolutely ridiculous, because what I've seen in terms of Trump performance, and I'll make a case for it, that the very reasons for which Nick Fuentes has launched the Groyper War, Trump has repeated them in the debate. He has repeated taking jobs from African Americans, the line about, you know, immigration hurts black people. That was a reason that Nick Fuentes started the Groyper War. Trump is still in it. Trump is still, he's still... I have here a note, divagation on World War III, and then eating the dogs. He's still giving to the opponents, to the Democrats, the bat to hit himself with, because the whole eating the dogs thing, you know, they're going to present it as a fact-checked false claim. And I've never talked about the whole eating the dogs thing because it's not been satisfying to my journalistic sense. I've not seen, do we have a picture of a guy in Ohio eating someone's dog? And I've never seen that. So people are taking pictures from 10 years ago in Haiti. Now, I have no doubt that that there is some savagery that we're inviting in Western civilization, and I'm against immigration, but you have to be careful. There are all these psyops around that are meant to make you say false stuff, and you have to be careful because they want to remove your credibility with this. So Trump came with the eating the dogs. We still don't have proof of this. It may never have happened. It may be a story that literally was started with memes and with old videos from other countries. As far as Israel, Trump is still very much pro-Israel. His best line of the debate, in my view, the most hilarious one was, "You're going to have to figure that out, Abdul," because he sent a picture of the house of a Taliban. And he said, "You stop shooting Americans or else..." And then he showed his house, and he was like, "You're going to have to figure out what that means, Abdul." That was hilarious, but still, it is very much within the pro-Israeli direction that Trump has always been, and that has justified the start of the Groyper War. So I don't know what the fuck is happening with Nick Fuentes. I'm super worried. First, he's talking about having sex with women on his chat, on his show. He doesn't seem super enthusiastic about it, but I think that Nick Fuentes may be getting normie-pilled or woman-pilled for the purpose of marriage, and that it's disrupting his cognition. Because same thing with Candace, he's also started saying, "Well, you know, I might have misjudged Candace, and we'll see, I'm talking to her in private, we'll see where that's headed, but I may have misjudged her." And so on all of his quest, he seems to be abandoning, and not on the basis of a true change or a true accomplishment that he would have gotten, but rather based on self-abnegation and based on basically an abandonment. That really sucks when the autists of the internet aren't autistic enough, they aren't stubborn enough, then we really get nothing, because there was nothing exciting to get in this election except this whole Groyper War. But if he abandons the Groyper War before it has accomplished anything, and I do claim that Trump didn't show any sort of distinction between his debate performance and everything before. This is not a new Trump. This is the very same Trump against which Nick had announced Groyper War. Lendal Guntram says, "Yeah, fact checked. I think there are police call recordings. Likely there is much more. We have people complaining at town hall meetings. I saw pics of migrants taking geese. In my opinion, all likely happening." Well, again, you know, I have no doubt that there are migrants in Ohio fucking up life for everyone. Absolutely certain. That's different from saying they are literally like genociding the local dogs. And, you know, okay, a geese. I want to hear about it. I want to see the pictures of the geese. I want to make sure that it's not a picture from Africa 15 years ago. And then I want to believe this. Like, I very much want to. But If you make the claim without the proofs, then you get caught in all these psyops. Nick is absolutely hilarious on the woman question. Before we get into a more critical look of his stance on the debate, Nick is fucking hilarious. Look at the lack of enthusiasm in the sexual experience.
I don't know how we Halcyon got on that tangent.
$50, raises right hand. "I will marry, fuck, and impregnate a white woman for Nicholas J. Fuentes."
That's your wife you're talking about. Let's have a little discretion, okay? That's your wife you're talking about. Let's be polite about it. We're going to make love to them. We're going to put babies in them, okay? And I know.
I love, this is so fascinating to me, because I'm kind of a grand uncle of the Groypers in a way. I've been critical and counseling to them for a long time publicly. And I've always been advocating strongly for heterosexual reproduction. And the gropers are coming around. They're realizing that I just had a few years of advance on them, but eventually they're going to be like Grandpa JF and having to be obsessive about insemination, because that's what we need.
I didn't want this day to come either. I'm a young man, okay? I'm a bit of a freak, but I'm getting to that age now. It's time to get married and have kids. Don't get on my case. Like, I want to get married before I'm 30. I'm 26 now. So I'm working myself up to it, is what we got to do. We all got to take one for the team. People say, Nick, you're a freak. I know. Freaks have to do it too. Everyone has to do it. Everyone has to have the kids. They say, but you're an incel freak. I know, but we have to do it. Believe me, I know. But this is what we have to do. We have to have more white people. And everyone, I got to lead by example. Everyone's got to participate. You know? Do I want to have the chore chart? No. Do I want to go to the garlic festival? No. Do I want to have a
the garlic festival?
A family.
That is exactly what you end up at with a wife.
Photo on the beach? Absolutely not. But this is what we have to do. Okay. We all have to do it. We all have to grow up a little bit and do it. Do it with our wives. Regular style. Not anything weird or cool. We have to do it.
Regular style. Oh my God. That's basically insemination philosophy 101.
Regular style. As the church prescribes. And we gotta have sex with them and have kids. And put up with all their annoying bullshit.
So the gropers, there will be a groper baby boom if the gropers respond to this appeal positively. Animus Uprising sends a super chat. Thank you so much. He says, the funny thing is that the last week or so, Nick was sounding like he was watching JF becoming totally blackpilled about Trump, and even saying it could be worse if Trump wins and then sells out again. People are starved for political or for action or political solution. I think it's Nick's youthful energy, to be honest. So it's a very weird Vera, and I think it has nothing to do with anything that Trump or Candace Owen have said. I believe that Nick is truly in a depressive state. His cognition doesn't work anymore. He may have had been secondarily exposed to nitrous oxide from hanging out too much with Ye. Something in his brain is not working. But before we get to the debate review, and yes, I did see a video of a woman getting arrested for eating a cat. But we don't get to see, like, all we get is really the police and the citizens saying, hey, she just ate a cat. And so it's like, okay, maybe she ate a cat. That's still not a dog. And so it's like, yeah, if you're going to be saying, well, they're eating the dogs, I need several events of dog eating to report this as a journalist or to talk about it, for it to be decent for Trump to talk about it in the debate. So you have to be careful with these details. Before we get to the debate, there was this Charlie Kirk versus pro-abortionist debate. Look, I don't think that either have a bad position. Even her, I think her position is consistent with our beliefs, but she's just extremely emotional about it, so it's fun to see how emotionally reactive she is.
So if you had a daughter and she was 10 and she got and she was well, gonna I, give birth I and she would no daughter. Wait oh and she was gonna give birth and she was gonna live, would you want her to go through that and carry her?
baby. That's awfully graphic.
It's no, but it's a real life scenario that happens to many people.
The answer is yes, the baby would be delivered.
Oh, okay, great. So that's insane.
But let me tell you why. No, hold on. Let me ask you a question. There's two ultrasounds I have. One is a baby conceived in one is a baby conceived by a loving couple. Which one is which?
You don't know.
Exactly, because it's all human rights
but
and it's all human beings.
But that doesn't matter. It's about your daughter who's passed.
Okay, so this debate is very clear. It's the tension between, if you're into the principle, the debate, it's the tension between, well, if it's killing a human being, why would you kill a victim? Why would you kill someone who has not committed the rape? This and the idea of, I don't want to be used as a housing device for rapist migrants. Two legitimate stance in my view. I personally don't think it's wrong to be allowing abortion for rape because precisely you don't want to be in a system that incentivizes the non-consensual insemination, because then it's a whole different game. Then Papa JF isn't even creepy anymore. I mean, if you want to open up the gates to free insemination with right to maintain the baby alive, then the game of reproduction has just gotten easier. It's really just about isolating a woman and coming inside of her. I don't take issue with any of these stances. I think they are both grounded in principle. Now, here's the problem. If you side with the girl... If you side with the girl, you're going to create a situation where everyone is claiming to have been raped. And so we don't have a proper methodological system to determine what is even a rape. I mean, there's all sorts of blurry lines here. You know the song Blurred Lines? Well, there are blurred lines in the question of rape. It seems that most women who claim rape, it's a regret. It's a form of regret that emerges after the act. And then you have the actual rape that you can imagine, but that are very rare. And women do lie a lot. So you are faced with the lack of a proper methodology to really isolate those supposed rape. Which I think might boil down to less than 1% of all rapes. Less than 1% of all rapes are true rapes, of the kind that the person has been totally constrained, totally taken against her will, and is not to be found anyhow to have cooperated with her own rapist. So we have a big issue. But I can understand also the side of Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk, in his view, it's a human life, and the human life has not committed the rape. In my view, as a biologist, the child is an extension of the parent. So in my view, it's the same genes. It is the genes of the rapist that are growing into your belly.
To give birth to it, and it's going to be tortured by that for the rest of her life.
You are
that's going to take away every freedom she's ever going to have. That's going to ruin her life. She's going to grow up, and she's going to be attached to another thing.
The point is, how you were conceived is irrelevant to what human rights you get.
But
now, that's a very defensible position. How you are conceived, like the baby, once it's born, the baby, like 1 minute after it's born, it's equally the product of rape as 1 minute before it's born. And you wouldn't kill it 1 minute after it's born. So why would you kill it 1 minute before it's born?
1 second. If a person conceived in rape walks on the side of the street, it's not like they don't get First Amendment rights or Second Amendment rights.
It's not about that person.
The worst thing to do to that the daughter is to then say, hey, we're going to go murder the being inside of you.
They wouldn't even know. Like, listen.
They wouldn't know.
That's a little emotional. You don't want to pull this one in a debate. You wouldn't even know. Well, the problem with this, we understand that you could... I do think that the babies in the belly, they feel being killed. So I do think they know. They know they're being killed. But that being said, suppose they wouldn't know. That doesn't excuse killing them. Like, I could kill you in your sleep in a way that you never really have a moment of thought about the idea of dying. You're just dead, and you never really had the nervousness. You didn't see me coming, and I strangled you in your dreams, and you just disappeared from existence. Your consciousness stops. That is not a reason for murder to be okay.
Listen.
But wouldn't it be a better story to say something evil happened and we do something good in the face of evil instead of saying we're going to do evil and then the being because we're gonna pander to the evil? No. What makes the West great is that we do good after evil, not evil after evil.
It's not about the being in the cells. I'm speaking.
Way too emotional. She could have made a good point here. It's not about the baby. It's about the liberty being violated in the female. She doesn't have to hold. She doesn't have to be on life support service at the request of any coming migrant who decides to come inside of her.
No, I'm speaking.
Got it.
Thank you. So it's not, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the person.
No,
no, I'm talking about the person who is dealing with the pregnancy. I am not talking about the cells. I don't care. No, listen, the fetus, the whatever, I don't care about that right now until it is formed. If there is a five-year-old child who is pregnant and the baby is 2 weeks in utero. Actually, they have, and they have given birth.
There is one
recorded case of a five-year-old girl who gave birth.
Is that common?
Yes. It's common for five-year-olds get sometimes, and if they get pregnant, I think they should be able to have medical access to something that could save not only just their life, but like their livelihood.
I'm curious, I
hope your daughter lives a very happy life and gets away from you.
So emotional that she's basically encouraging his daughter to become a fugitive, to defoo her conservative parents. Isn't that fascinating? I was also reading, someone pulled a very old blog post of Rouge V. Oh my God, those were the good Rouge V days. Why it's impossible for men to be authentic. I noticed that the more I'm myself in a relationship with a woman, as I see myself, the happier I am with her. On the other hand, the more I have to change my behavior in line to what I think she would find attractive, the less satisfaction I get from that relationship. While being yourself is not the key to getting laid, it may be the key to being satisfied in relationships. But now that times have changed, this may be an impossible feat. Oh, absolutely. Dating in the normie sphere is a guarantee that you're gonna be having to sculpt your behavior on demand, which is the wrong thing to do. Females should just choose a man whose natural behavior converges to what they want, and then not try to change it. That's selection. And that's the only thing you can do in biology. You can only select. You know, if you try to shape me into another man, I can display a facade for you. But first, displaying that facade is very demanding energetically. It's not the real me. I ultimately have genes that are telling me to be different from that facade. And you're reproducing with these genes. This is one thing that the female doesn't seem to understand. You're reproducing with the genes. You are in a partnership with the genes. I can spout some leftist talking point to satisfy you. Oh yeah, I am all for women having control of their own body. But that is not what my genes are saying. That is what I know you are requesting. And so the only thing that you're testing for when you go for that facade is the ability of your male to lie. And you are cradling yourself into a lie because you're reproducing ultimately with the non-lie. You're reproducing with what has no facade other than the ability to display lies, which is what you end up being selecting. Before we get to the debate, another subject. Elon Musk has made some waves with his insemination offer. People are pointing out, wow, is Elon Musk watching JFG tonight? Because he does the exact same thing that I had done with Just Party Things. And I want to make a defense of Elon Musk here. I made a short defense on Twitter. So he said, fine, Taylor, you win. I will give you a child and guard your cats with my life. Now, it's an unsolicited insemination offer, the same type that I had done with Just Party Things. And Andrew Wilson had been criticizing me for it. But I want to make a defense of these unsolicited insemination offer. I think they have a function. What I said on Twitter is I knew this surprise insemination offer by Elon would trigger some people, but the fact is we need to talk about how Taylor Swift is due to be impregnated and silence is not an option. So I don't believe that you should offer insemination to unsolicited people. You shouldn't go on the street, catch a random woman and say, hey, do you want a baby? That would be impolite, and I don't argue that we should do this. However, there is a special category of women. They are public personalities. And public personalities, we can have more leeway in the way we interact with them because ultimately, a public personality is standing on the public space, and the public space is kind of letting all possible anti-natalist messaging go uncalled. Like, people wouldn't be triggered that someone says to Taylor Swift, hey, Taylor, take your time with babies. Take your time with Travis, your new boyfriend, your footballer boyfriend. You know, babies are a great responsibility and you don't want to be pressed in time to make them. So the anti-natalist message constantly goes uncalled, and it doesn't matter that you consent or not consent to it. It's being omnipresent in our culture. On the other hand, if we make the idea of insemination too taboo, we are giving an advantage to anti-natalist messaging. And I believe that what Elon Musk is doing here is normalizing insemination requests. And that as a social function that, in my view, as part of the culture war, has a legitimate use. So this guy was triggered and he was saying, I'm sorry, but the richest man on the planet casually telling a woman he's not dating, that he's going to put a baby in her, is so skin-crawlingly creepy, I don't know where to start. But he didn't say, I will put a baby in you. He said, I will give you a child. And so he's putting an offer on the table. She can refuse it. So there's no sign here that Elon Musk is threatening rape, threatening non-consensual sex, but you have to make place in society for that offer to be on the table, and I believe that's what Elon is doing. He is regularizing with the hope that perhaps, you know, people watching his Twitter account will be more bold in their approach of women, and they should. Ty says, or they like to say, happy wife, happy life. And it's like, yeah, because if the guy isn't happy, he will still keep to his end of the bargain. But if the woman is upset, she will ruin the peace. Oh, yeah, there is definitely an asymmetry in in marriage. All right, let's get to the review of the Trump performance. Overall, I think what we have here is an even performance, where I believe that Kamala has been slightly more successful at showing a straighter cognition and at talking to her base. Now, her base is not me, so I'm not sensitive to her message. Her message is Donald Trump is basically a broken man who has been found guilty, liable in all sorts of cases, and has gone to bankruptcy. He is obsessed with his own self, a kind of a narcissist who ends up appreciating other dictators because ultimately deep down he dreams of being a dictator himself. And I think she's made a beautiful and solid case for these ideas, although I don't agree. I don't think Trump is a dictator. Trump, I believe, is just too weak at this point. He's so weak as to be weaker than the average politician on lines of drain the swamp or on lines of fighting the deep state. I see him as an absolute loss. He's not going to fight the deep state. So let's go through what I think is proof that Nick Fuentes doesn't have a justification to be enthusiastic about Trump, and that Trump is still very well cemented in his old ways that Nick Fuentes was critical of 1 week ago. So let's first see the line on taking the jobs from the minorities.
A few years ago, this has been a disaster for people, for the middle class, but for every class. On top of that, we have millions of people pouring into our country from prisons and jails, from mental institutions and insane asylums, and they're coming in and they're taking jobs that are occupied right now by African Americans and Hispanics, and also.
So see, immigration is a problem. Why? It's a problem because it takes the jobs of black people. Why are you still running on 17% of the US population? Why are you not running on 60% of the population, which is white? Incomprehensible. But it is what Trump has been doing again and again, and it's exactly why we are in groper war. So why is it that Nick Fuentes, in front of the very same Trump repeating the very same thing, suddenly starts talking soft on groper war? I don't get it. Here we can see what was the main message that Kamala wanted to push yesterday. It's this whole idea of Trump is the past of America. And I think she's got a point. I mean, there is a future deployment of America in which you could think of the whole, you know, Trump and his rumination around election fraud. I was starting to feel that it was getting old 4 years ago. I'm starting to feel that it's extremely old right now. And so to have a Trump that is constantly in kind of hatred about his own fate and not caring about the American people and his own program, that's really not reassuring. And Kamala hit straight on this by repeating the whole playbook line.
What I intend to do is build on what we know are the aspirations and the hopes of the American people. But I'm going to tell you all, in this debate tonight, you're going to hear from the same old tired playbook, a bunch of lies, grievances, and name-calling. What you're going to hear tonight is a detailed and dangerous plan called Project 2025 that the former president intends on implementing if he were elected again. I believe very strongly that the American people want a president who understands the importance of bringing us together, knowing we have so much more in common than what separates us, and I pledge to you to be a president for all Americans.
President Trump will give you a minute here to respond.
Number one, I have nothing to do, as you know, and as she knows better than anyone, I have nothing to do with Project 20.
See, Trump goes on the denial of Project 2024, 2025. It's ridiculous that she's saying it, because at this point, everyone knows it's a lie. But at the same time, this is Trump denying again association with Project 2025, one of the reasons why the groper war was started. So Trump hasn't given you anything, Nick. Trump is still the exact same that's denying association with the far right. And one of the complaints of Nick Fuentes was Trump is only making a press conference about inflation. Well, we still had a Trump still set on the price of cereals or bacons.
We are going to take in billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars. I had no inflation, virtually no inflation. They had the highest inflation perhaps in the history of our country, because I've never seen a worse period of time. People can't go out and buy cereal or bacon or eggs or anything else. The people of our country are absolutely dying with what they've done.
So that is another point that the groper war was started on. Trump is still talking about inflation and the lack of a living standard under Biden. And on the subject of abortion, Trump has not been successful at presenting his content in a way that would be captured by the low IQ American population. And so when you communicate, the problem with Trump is he has 10 ideas at the same time, and he wants to ride on, he doesn't want to give up. When you do communication, you have to give up so much. There would be a 10, 15 ideas that you want to communicate, but you won't have time for it. So you have to center back on the most important part of your message. But look at how Trump talks of abortion. Even I, as a political specialist, I don't fully understand what Trump is saying here. Oh, we did very good on this, and then we set up this, and then, well, they want this, but we give it to the state, and the state, well, personally, I'm for, well, you know, I know this guy personally. He's rambling and going on tangents, and this is an example of why Trump, in his current cognitive state, is incapable of even equating a Kamala Harris, who is not particularly very performing in this debate. But still, Trump is less clear. And look at the difference. Look at the contrast here. The clear message of Kamala versus the unclear message of Trump.
Incest and life of the mother. I believe strongly in it. Ronald Reagan did also. 85% of Republicans do. Exceptions, very important, but we were able to get it, and now states are voting on it, and for the first time you're going to see, look, this is an issue that's torn our country apart for 52 years. Every legal scholar, every Democrat, every Republican, liberal, conservative, they all wanted this issue to be brought back to the states where the people could vote. And that's
that can't be true. Kamala didn't want Roe v. Wade abolished. Most Democrats didn't want Roe v. Wade abolished. So he's talking about experts and, oh yeah, the experts of the Democrats, but not the Democrats. The Democrats weren't for the abolishment of Roe v. Wade. They were constantly alarming on this, and they were alarmed that you would give power to Supreme Court justices that would revert Roe v. Wade.
What happened. Now, Ohio, the vote was somewhat liberal. Kansas, the vote was somewhat liberal, much more liberal than people would have thought. But each individual state is voting. It's the vote of the people now. It's not tied up in the federal government. I did a great service in doing it. It took courage to do it. And the Supreme Court had great courage in doing it. And I give tremendous credit to those six justices.
There is no state in this country where it is legal to kill a baby after it's born.
Now, this was a kind of passive-aggressive fact-check moment, but Trump didn't say that they were killing babies after birth. Trump said, if you listen to the governor of Virginia, there was a governor of Virginia before, the ex-governor of Virginia, former, was mentioning the possibility of putting the baby aside and deciding deciding what would happen to his fate. So you had clearly a biased media here in the ABC News host, but that is not new, and that is to be expected. If you don't go there as a Republican with the idea that they will all be against you, all teaming up against you, you are wrong. But that being said, look at the last minute we've heard from Trump. What is Trump's position on abortion? Well, it has to be given to the state. And yeah, there are some states that are more liberal. There are some states that are less liberals. I did that. I want the credit. It was very good. Very, very strong. Very strong. Oh, yeah. So he's asking for credit, but we don't even get for the regular person who's not a specialist of politics. They need to hear. And the woman airing ABC News, the leftist woman or the centrist woman, she needs to hear a Trump that says, I don't want to interfere with your reproductive rights. That's all he could say. And it would have been clearer than this whole, oh, yeah, we've been doing it across the states. And yeah, everyone was asking that we do it. And we did it. And it was hard to do. Now, compare this to Kamala clarity.
Madam Vice President, I want to get your response to President Trump.
Well, as I said, you're going to hear a bunch of lies, and that's not actually a surprising fact. let's understand how we got here. Donald Trump hand-selected three members of the United States Supreme Court with the intention that they would undo the protections of Roe v. Wade. And they did exactly as he intended. And now in over 20 states, there are Trump abortion bans, which make it criminal for a doctor or nurse to provide health care in one state. It provides...
See, simple. And new guy says lies. Doesn't matter. And it's not lies. It is true that there are some degree of banning, some degree of limits that have been put here and there. So that's simple. And the woman, the centrist or liberal woman who's hearing this, now she knows Trump is the enemy. She even called it the state Trump bans. Now, it's not Trump, but she presented a reflection on which you can attribute it to Trump. Well, Trump named those Supreme Court justices with the intent that they would let the state choose, and the states eventually chose abortion bans. So that is such a clearer message. This is why I agree with Richard Spencer to say that Kamala won this debate. She won by a little. It was not a total stop, but she did better on delivering a clear message. I want to show you another example of Trump trying to get everything at the same time, and in the end, getting nothing. In communication, you can't have one point and it's contrary. But Trump is so obsessed about, I want to say everything that's on my mind. Oh, I want to say this line, and then I want to say this line. And he forgets that ultimately you can't say one thing and it's contrary to the American people. It really sounds weird, and it shows that you're kind of... It shows the narcissism of Trump, ultimately, that he would want something and it's contrary at the same time and take credit for both. Listen to this.
Senate and the House. She's not going to get the vote. She can't get the vote. She won't even come close to it. So it's just talk. You know what it reminds me of? When they said they're going to get student loans terminated, and it ended up being a total catastrophe. The student loans, and then her, I think probably her boss... If you call him a boss, he spends all his time on the beach. But
her boss? If you call him a boss, I mean, he spends all of his time on a beach. Well, so what is Trump doing here? He's saying this move didn't really come from her. It probably came from her boss. Okay, so you want to present Kamala Harris as a second-degree employee who has nothing to do with the current state of America. That's one thing you can get. Now, the other thing is to present Biden as so incompetent and so out there that he doesn't even know he's a president. That's another thing. You can't have these two things together. And this is Trump trying to get the two together. This is Trump trying to say, oh yeah, President Biden is the boss of Kamala. So don't forget, nothing of what's currently happening is due to Kamala. It's all Biden. But at the same time, I'm not sure, because Biden is always at the beach, so he's not really the president. So two things, you cannot have one thing and it's contrary in communication.
Lie. I'm not signing a ban, and there's no reason to sign a ban, because we've gotten what everybody wanted. Democrats, Republicans, and everybody else, and every legal scholar. When they said they're going to get student loans terminated, and it ended up being a total catastrophe. The student loans, and then her, I think probably her boss, if you call him a boss, he spends all his time on the beach. But look, her boss went out and said...
And when Trump says, but look, and you are in a monologue, Trump. No one has stopped you from saying what you were saying. So you were in a monologue, you cut yourself into opening a parenthesis that was actually arguing so hard against yourself that you feel the need to say, look, look, as if you were interrupted. But you were the one interrupting yourself. Trump has like two or three minds arguing with each other in his brain, and it shows when he tries to get all sides of an issue at the same time. Another centerpiece of the Kamala technique yesterday was to center it around needs. And that's, of course, it's a Marxist thing. It's not something I agree with. The government shouldn't distribute based on needs because needs are infinite and you're just going to be helping people in the need to make more people in the need. But she was focused on that message, and as a leftist, I think she scored very good with the leftist crowd that were listening to this because they felt that, oh, here's someone who cares about what I need.
Talk about is you. You will not hear him talk about your needs, your dreams, and your desires. And I'll tell you, I believe you deserve a president who actually puts you first, and I pledge to you that I will.
Vice President Harris.
So that was a strong moment, and she has repeated this line very often. Here's another conflicted Trump moment. Where he's trying again to get the two sides of an issue. He wants to criticize Soller, but at the same time, he wants to say, I'm a big fan of Soller. So what do we end up with? We end up with a single sentence in which Trump is both saying, Soller makes no sense. Also, I'm a big fan of Soller. Listen to this. I cannot believe that this guy isn't fixing this.
Day after that election, they'll go back to destroying our country and oil will be dead. Fossil fuel will be dead. We'll go back to windmills and we'll go back to solar, where they need a whole desert to get some energy to come out. You ever see a solar plant? By the way, I'm a big fan of solar.
How can you get this? How can you be so narcissistic that you are making a critique of solar? You're like, well, you're going to end up with solar. You're going to end up with solar, and it takes acres and acres to produce just a little bit of... Hey, by the way, I'm a big fan of solar. Have you ever seen a plant? I've seen a plant. I've been in a plant. I've seen those plants. In fact, we ordered a solar plant. What the fuck is happening in a human brain that you can be able to change position within a single sentence? This is so frustrating about Trump, and this is why I can't give him a victory in the objective. He was a little bit of the very confused... You know, when Democrats talk about Trump, they project this image of a totally confused and delusional man. He's not this super confused and delusional man. But he was a little bit yesterday of the old man that they do see in him. He was a little bit of that. Let's listen to this. This shouldn't happen on the public space. You should have people trained not to argue against themselves publicly.
Day after that election, they'll go back to destroying our country and oil will be dead. Fossil fuel will be dead. We'll go back to windmills and we'll go back to solar, where they need a whole desert to get some.
Okay, so I want to show you the cognitive process here. If you go with Kamala, we're going to be stuck with windmills and solar. Okay, so solar is bad. You don't want to be stuck with solar only. Why? Because solar takes too many acres, it's unproductive by the area, it's destructive of the environment. Okay.
Energy to come out. You ever see a solar plant, by the way?
Now, the cognitive process goes as follows in Trump's head. Okay, I just made a statement about how solar is bad. I need to present myself as an expert. Why do I know about solar? Oh, well, it's because I've seen solar. And so let me ask to the host, have you ever seen solar? Have you ever seen these plants? I've seen them, so I'm an expert. So that is Trump trying to appeal to an expertise of his. He has seen them, so he knows what a solar plant looks like.
I'm a big fan of solar.
And now he's a big fan of solar. He has reverted from... You're going to be stuck in the communist hellhole of Solar Kamala to I'm a big fan of Solar within 5 seconds. this is not a man who's cognitively intact. James says, Lendalt, you are seriously going to blame Jews for Trump's solar position? Do you check under your bed every night for a Jew before going to bed? Yeah, because Lendalt was pointing to Talmudic training. I mean, I wouldn't exclude it. Trump has been hanging out with a lot of Jewish, pro-Jewish people. And he is displaying here a feature of Jewish argument, which is this ability to defend anything, really, and to defend anything and to strike as they claim to be victimized. Perhaps it is ultimately a leak of Talmudic training, but we don't know. Who's training Trump? Is he going through the same thing that young Jewish people are going to, that we've seen on a documentary, where they're basically at a table and they yell at each other and they take any argument for any idea and they just spout it until they win, just out of exhaustion from their opponent? Maybe that's the training that Trump went through. I don't know. I don't know of evidence for it. And then there was a moment where I want to show you also, this is part of my black pill about life. It's that we can't have an honest public discussion. We don't have time. And we so much don't have time that people are using shortcuts for really what they mean. And here we had a moment where both the host and Trump, in my view, were not representing reality properly. While accusing both each other of something, they were actually both wrong in a way. And I want to present this segment because that's just... I suffer when I see that kind of stuff, because with the public space, what I wanted to do, and with my old contribution to media, what I wanted to do is impose an honest public conversation about everything. And we failed. Of course, we were censored to death. Until we were able to recover a little bit under Elon Musk. But holy shit, did people not want an honest conversation about everything. But here's one problem where you can't even use the right words. Here the host will accuse Trump. Trump will defend himself by saying it was sarcasm. Well, I know this was not sarcasm, but I also know that Trump didn't mean it literally.
In a landslide. In the past couple of weeks leading up to this debate, you have said, quote, you lost by a whisker, that you, quote, didn't quite make it, that you came up a little bit short. Are you now acknowledging that you lost in 2020?
No, I don't acknowledge that at all. But I said that sarcastically. That. It was said, we lost by a whisker. That was said sarcastically. Look.
Now, a few weeks ago, there started to be a social media campaign around saying, oh, Trump just admitted he lost. And that was Trump where he said, we lost by a whisker. And Trump was not sarcastic when he said this. So here the host will kind of use this opportunity to say, hey, I didn't detect any sarcasm in what you were saying.
There's so much proof. All you have to do is look at it. And they should have sent it back to the legislatures for approval. I got almost 75 million votes, the most votes any sitting president has ever gotten. I was told if I got 63, which was what I got in 2016, you can't be beaten. The election, people should never be thinking about it. An election is fraudulent. We need two things. We need walls. We have to have it. We have to have borders. And we have to have good elections. Our elections are bad. And a lot of these illegal immigrants coming in, they're trying to get them to vote. They can't even speak English. They don't even know what country they're in practically. And these people are trying to get them to vote. And that's why they're allowing them to come into our country.
I did watch all of these pieces of video. I didn't detect the sarcasm lost by.
So here you have the host coming back and saying there was no sarcasm. It's true that there was no sarcasm. When Trump said lost by a whisker, he didn't mean we lost legitimately. He simply meant, well, we lost by the count, by their count, which was fraudulent. Which was fraudulent because in the view of Trump, in the Trump imaginary, the entire process by which the Democrats are importing infinite amounts of voters into the states, the very process by which California became a Democrat state, and by which California keeps getting growing population counts and therefore growing representation in the presidential election, this whole process is a fraud. So when Trump says we lost by a whisker, he means the counts were lower for us, but the counts are fraudulent. So it's not sarcasm. And so Trump's defense here is the fastest he can do. It's easy to say, oh, it's sarcasm. It was sarcasm. But the reality is it was not sarcasm. We don't have the time anymore to talk honestly. And the honest thing to say here was Trump didn't mean loss by legitimate means. He meant loss by fraudulent means, period. But of course, that is too accurate to state. And ultimately, the sarcasm defense is quicker to say on a TV clip. He's right, you know, from a tactical perspective. But I find it sad that we're in this fakery. This fakery where you have to fake, you have to go fast, you have to use the imperfect words at times. One of the very successful moments of Kamala Harris, and Kamala Harris, her whole election campaign is based around being a pale copy of Trump. Being a pale copy of Trump that can spout a little bit leftist talking points to her base, but ultimately being, in terms of program and in terms of promises, to be as close to Trump as possible. Because she doesn't want to lose the middle, and she saw that Trump isn't going with a far-right campaign. He's going for a middle-of-the-road campaign. And so Kamala has properly understood tactically that her job is to be basically a Republican center-right person, which she's been good at, and she's been good at pushing these things while also reassuring her leftist base, I care about you. I care about your needs. One of the things that she did in the debate, which kind of doubles on this copying strategy, is to copy the style of Trump. Trump, when he goes hard on someone, he loves to say, you're a disgrace. You're a disgrace. It's disgraceful. And look at Kamala just doing the Trump thing. That was fascinating to me.
The United States. And world leaders are laughing at Donald Trump. I have talked with military leaders, some of whom worked with you, and they say you're a disgrace. And when
you see, she practiced that line because she says it with the same intonation. You're a disgrace. Like this kind of piggy, just very dirty, rah, you're a disgrace. That was really Trump, and she does a very good copy of it. That was also a tactical win by Kamala. On the question of Israel, that's another point with which I don't see the reason for a stop of the Groyper War by Nick Fuentes. Because ultimately we had a Trump totally backing Israel, totally continuing on the idea that Kamala hates Israel. Perhaps one of the most base thing that was said in this debate was she hates Israel, she hates the Arabs in her own way. And I was like, whoa, 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 Trump, I'm already rooting for Kamala. You don't need to sell her to me anymore. That was fascinating to hear Trump say this, because ultimately I think that the average American is closer to the description that Trump just did than to Trump's official position. I think that the average American hates Israel and hates the Arabs and generally doesn't like any of the trouble coming from that area, and it's like, doesn't like taking sides. I would say that's probably most American.
Predictions, and I hope I'm wrong about that one. She hates Israel. At the same time, in her own way, she hates the Arab population because...
See? He's being critical of her, but actually that is probably the mainstream position of most regular people in America. Most regular people will not make you a diatribe about how they will defend Israel and they are our allies. Most people wouldn't say this. But most people also are insensitive about the Gaza stuff and fuck these Arabs and I don't really care. So most people actually qualify here under what Trump is criticizing, which is another reason why the Griper War is still totally justified, is that Trump is at odds with the American people. Trump is misaligned, and he's aligned with the elite position on this, which is there is a side to take. John Drake says, the fact that electoral state power is measured by total population, not citizens in each state, is reason enough to break the unions. Illegals don't even have to vote to influence elections. Just being here is getting it done. Absolutely. That is like, in any other situation, that would be called a fraud. Like, imagine you have a... You have customers that you are registering on your logs and they make you money but they don't actually eat in your restaurant. They're just there and you're getting some fraudulent way of including them on your registry and you make money from just their presence because of that fraudulent means. In any business, that would be inflation of numbers, it will be deceptive, it would be a lie, it would be fraud. We do this in America, and it's democracy. It's the institution of our democracy. Another line on which Kamala was extremely successful is to present Trump as this narcissist. This is one of the things that leftists do think strongly about Trump. Leftists have the impression that Trump is ultimately this child inside. And they're very condescending about this, and they are partly wrong about this too, but they are also partly right. There is a narcissistic child in Trump. That kind of never grew because he was raised in too much luxury. And this narcissistic child admires dictators. And Kamala has been very successful at basically impeaching Trump on, ultimately, you're making all of these moves because of this little narcissistic child inside of you. Look at how she does it.
It is very well known that Donald Trump is weak and wrong on national security and foreign policy. It is well known that he admires dictators, wants to be a dictator on day one, according to himself. It is well known that he said of Putin that he can do whatever the hell he wants and go into Ukraine. It is well known that he said when Russia went into Ukraine, it was brilliant. It is well known he exchanged love letters with Kim Jong-un, and it is absolutely well known that these dictators and autocrats are rooting for you to be president again because they're...
I wanted to advance to another completion of that argument. I just misclicked here.
Pennsylvania, how quickly you would give up for the sake of favor and what you think is a friendship with what is known to be a dictator who would eat you for lunch.
Vice President Harris, thank you. We've heard from...
So she's basically saying you're so obsessed about your friendships that you feel you have developed with these dictators that you would give up land to them, that you would basically concede to Putin, that you would give up the south of Ukraine. Now, if I analyze this objectively, does Kamala have a plan to take back the south of Ukraine, you know, these areas that were taken? No. Is Biden or Kamala or any Democrat capable of getting back Crimea? No. Not without a full-scale war against Russia, basically. So it's not like they have an alternative. But Kamala Harris succeeds at presenting, at least for her leftist base, they will digest this. Her leftist base will be like, hey, that's true. You know, we have a man child here. A man child who wants so much to be in the deal, in the social circles of these dictators, that he's basically giving away Ukrainian land and conceding victory to Putin. It's a reframing. She doesn't have an alternative. And so personally, I don't take issue with giving these lands to Putin, because you don't, it's not your war. You've been trying to use Ukraine as a proxy, and Ukraine was not competent enough. No matter how much you've poured into them, they couldn't really combat the force of Putin. So that's it. I don't take issue fundamentally with the position of Trump, but I have to grant that she has a proper presentation of it to frame it as a loss of ultimately American power. Love letters. Yeah, love letters was kind of a weird choice of word. But, you know, this is the leftist view on Trump, that he's been basically too cozy with these dictators. And finally, the last review that I wanted to do of this debate, total defeat by Trump, who gets called out by the TV host for not having a plan. And his answer is, well, a plan. I have concepts of a plan. When you have to go into the abstract of having concepts of a plan. Now, concepts is a very special word for people in the real estate market, because concepts is a thing. I don't know about this, but if I understand correctly, it's like the architects, it's not the plan to build a building, but maybe you have a model of it. You have the whole structure, but you don't have the final plans. You have the concepts. But to be invoking it in this kind of context, which is not real estate, on the question of healthcare, it's like, it's kind of loose.
It's going to cost our people, our population, less money and be better healthcare than Obamacare, then I would absolutely do it. But until then, I'd run it as good as it can be run.
So just a yes or no, you still do not have a plan?
I have concepts of a plan. I'm not president right now. But if we...
And here Kamala Harris is laughing because she knows what just went on. You have concepts of a plan? And your excuse is that you're not president right now? Like, weren't you the very same person who was saying that Kamala didn't have enough planning in her website, that all of her lines were taken from others and that there wasn't a plan in there? And here you are basically invoking that you're not the president of the US, so you don't need to have a plan for what will be your take on healthcare. That was the weakest moment of Trump, I believe, in this debate. So all in all, I cannot see a victory of Trump here. I cannot join the gripers and Nick, who have said somehow that this was a great debate performance, that this was Trump being back to his roots. I don't see the roots at all here. I see a cognitively broken man. It wasn't terrible. It was just subpar. And Kamala was just a little bit above. Kamala ultimately was talking strongly to her base. And perhaps the challenge for her is to be a little more at the center. Perhaps the challenge for her would be to succeed at converting her message, at really demarxicizing her message. Because there was a strong Marxist feel to her message when she's like, I care about you, about your needs, about your ambitions. That is extremely, extremely Marxist. And I think that the American people may be not ready for this, although it's a very condescending and childish way in which politics happen all over the world. If there's still a flame of liberty in the heart of the American, they may be feeling this kind of female approach to politics as being unfit. But at the same time, modern politics is a whole bunch of women, a whole bunch of normie women voting. And so who knows, maybe she's on target. Maybe the way she's trying to win this campaign is the right way. In any case, I believe that her performance was objectively superior. New guy says, every point we didn't go over in the show, she flailed and flailed on. Trump will win. Well, I'm happy if Trump wins. You know, I personally benefit if Trump wins because I think there will be a stronger economy for super chats, book sales, and Bitcoin. So ultimately, personally, I'm in a better state if Trump wins. But, bro, I don't know. I don't know if Trump can win this. DK Shadow says, Kamala was annoying. Rodi Lucid says, I think Kamala only appeared to do well because we contrast her with Biden for the last 3 years and she doesn't have dementia. Yeah, I mean, if I was to criticize Kamala, of course I would have wanted more itemized promises. I think she missed a couple of shots. She could have had a couple of comeback with stronger programs, stronger promises to the American people. I don't think she's giving much to her base in terms of... Basically, she's trying to present herself as the soft flavor, pale copy, no trouble politician. But, you know, I would have wanted, perhaps if I was a leftist, I would have wanted Kamala to promise me some stuff, more concrete stuff. And if I want to be fully critical of Kamala, perhaps I can finish with this tonight. She missed a very good opportunity here. Because Trump had been mocking her switch between Indian identity and Black identity. It was very clear. There was a time at which she was appearing on Indian cuisine shows. Okay, back at the beginning of her career. And now she's appearing on, you know, going to buy vinyl discs of Black artists. Clearly, Kamala has tried to veer from being Indian to being Black. And that would have been a wonderful opportunity for her to grab, to go super aggressive on Trump. The same way she had done, I believe, with Biden, where she had said, I was the girl on these buses. She could have said to Trump, hey, because Trump totally stepped back on his racial attack. The host approached the subject and Trump said, oh, well, I don't care. She can be whatever she wants. This would have been a wonderful opportunity for Kamala to come back and hit Trump strong. And I'll show you how, okay? I'll play the segment and I'll show, I will be Kamala. And I will do the right answer to Trump.
Mr. President, you recently said of Vice President Harris, quote, I didn't know she was Black until a number of years ago when she happened to turn Black and now she wants to be known as Black. I want to ask a bigger picture question here tonight. Why do you believe it's appropriate to weigh in on the racial identity of your opponent?
I don't, and I don't care. I don't care what she is. I don't care. You make a big deal out of something. I couldn't care less.
See, this is where you grab Trump. Kamala should have come and said, oh, well, I'm very surprised because I did see those speeches of you claiming that you had an opinion about me not being Black, and I thought you would come back strong here, but you're putting your tail between your legs here and walking it back when I'm in front of you. Are you intimidated? Is that my presence? I would have expected a little more aggression on this side because I've seen how much you had an opinion on this back there when you're among your crowd. She could have come out with this. It would have been an hilarious moment. It would have been a girl boss moment also. She could have literally have demonstrated that Trump is not as courageous as he often says he is. Because there he was in his crowd of MAGA, mocking her blackness and Indianness. But as soon as the TV host touches the point, he's like, oh no, she can do whatever she wants. She could have highlighted this, and with her experience as a prosecutor, she probably knows how to do this, you know, to show someone as lacking courage. New guy says, ah, but JF, she ain't black. Ah, she, well, it's not clear. She is Indian for sure. Now there's a Jamaican father somewhere. Is the Jamaican black? Are the Jamaicans black at all? Are the Jamaican foundational American, or are they a separate genetic group? It's all very complicated. Anyways, that is it for my review of the debate. Much love, everyone, and I'll see you all tomorrow. Thank you.